Hello and welcome to this Meetings Today podcast. I'm Taylor Smith, content developer, destinations and features for Meetings Today. And I'm here today with Sight's Chief Marketing Officer, Porik Gilligan, who just wrapped up an exciting Smart Monday panel discussion surrounding the launch of the 2023 Incentive Travel Index. Thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
I'm delighted to be here.
Yes, I'm very excited too. And like I said, that panel was so exciting. It's just amazing to see that incentive travel is really back to, we're not looking at these pre-pandemic numbers anymore. We're surpassing them. We are coming back strong. But to start, can you give our listeners a bit of background into exactly what the Incentive Travel Index is and what it does for the industry, what it tells us from a meeting planner perspective and kind of just the background behind the index itself?
So I suppose the background is that there are a number of associations that actually are involved in the area of incentive travel, Sight being one of them. Mm-hmm. For Sight, it's our exclusive kind of domain. It's where we operate. There are others then like the IRF, which is a foundation, but has also got a focus on conducting research in the area of incentive travel. Mm-hmm. There are other associations like FICP, Finance and Insurance Conference Professionals. Mm-hmm. I have to get that right. They changed their acronym recently.
So many acronyms to remember in this industry.
But those three associations had, over the years, conducted their own kind of research into incentive travel from their kind of particular point of view. And we came together about 5 years ago with the realization that we were probably kind of bothering our industry by conducting three different, you know, research projects. Mm-hmm. Why not just have one and combine resources? So that's what we did. So the Incentive Travel Industry Index, as it was initially called, was started by those three associations. Mm-hmm. And we continue it today with Sight Foundation, working with the IRF, mm-hmm. and using Oxford Economics as our kind of research partner. And it's an annual index, so it's an annual kind of survey of the nature, purpose, and direction mm-hmm. of incentive travel.
Yes.
And because it's annual, we get to be able to compare year on year what's mm-hmm. happening. We can verify kind of whether a particular trend that we saw emerging in 2018, mm-hmm. has it gone anywhere?
Yes.
You know, has
mm-hmm.
it kind of just died a death? Many trends do. Mm-hmm. Some trends become mainstream, you know, processes that we need to kind of adapt our market to. So the index is something that helps us with that. Over the years, we've made it more kind of predictive. Mm-hmm. So we've looked into the future. We've asked incentive travel professionals to tell us what they're kind of, what they're seeing in mm-hmm. terms of future developments, what they're seeing in terms of future selection of destinations. Mm-hmm. So what we end up with then is a kind of a predictive sort of forecast mm-hmm. of where the industry is going. And I think that's why people really look forward to it.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you can compare results annually because you ask a lot of the same questions to get a feel for where the industry's been and where it's going. But I know you also mentioned that this year some of the lines of inquiry are new and they're surrounding things like channel relationships and working together. So why is it important to consider these new topics and themes every year as our industry adapts and changes?
I think there are certain sort of things in the world of business that kind of change on a short cycle, mm-hmm. and then there are other things that take a longer cycle to change. Mm-hmm. So I think research, in order to be valid, has to kind of have lines of inquiry that follow both of those patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to be picking up on what's happening on an annual basis, and then what's happening maybe every 5 years or every 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the new ones that we introduced this year was really one that we did have in the past when we actually all conducted our own individual research, which was to look at the channel relationships and see what kind of what state they were in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where DMCs being contacted directly by corporate end users with the incentive houses being cut out of the picture,
mm-hmm.
where incentive houses going directly into destinations. We just wanted to understand that was important for I suppose the membership of our organization, which is Sight, but important for the for the incentive industry at large. So we went back to that this year,
mm-hmm.
and what we saw, I think, was an interesting scenario of that I think everybody knew, but when you see it in the visual precision of print, it's a totally different thing.
Yes.
You know? So everybody knew, relations are not maybe as good as they could be. And then you see, actually, that is the case. So why is it like that? And the reason it's like that is because we've come out of the pandemic at a much faster rate of recovery than we have resources to deal with. And there's just compression throughout our entire industry. So the corporations that are making decisions kind of in a 3-month cycle instead of in a 12-month cycle. That's putting pressure on the agencies that are working with them. That in turn is putting pressure on the DMCs and the destination suppliers that the agencies are working with. And the whole thing is a kind of a hot mess at its worst.
Yes.
At its best, it's okay. Everybody is rising to the occasion, but at its worst, it is not pretty.
So this year too, I kind of want to talk about how you mentioned during the panel today, we could have talked about 40 different themes and topics that came out of the results, but we broke it down into 4. And I kind of want to mention and talk about the purpose of incentive travel and how it's shifting to these, as you mentioned, hard power and soft power projects, where it was very about motivating the individual to work hard. And now it's more so bringing us all together in a way that reminds us of the importance of face-to-face interactions. So can you talk a little bit about what the results showed in that regard?
Sure. So, I mean, this kind of hard dollar versus soft power thing is a bit of a pendulum. So it goes back and forth, and it depends on economic cycles. So when the economy is good and corporations are making money, they become focused on, you know, the wider kind of purpose of why they exist. And certainly I think within the corporate world we've seen a change over the last number of decades away from an exclusive focus on profit to maybe a triple bottom line, where corporations are talking about profit, planet, and people, you know, which is a much more kind of holistic way of running a business, and that's a really, really good thing.
I love seeing that.
Yeah, we've seen that reflected in incentive travel, and in what our respondents are telling us is the purpose of incentive travel in a particular year. So we've seen it kind of, we've seen the hard dollar focus decrease over the last number of years and the soft power focus increase. But this year we saw a kind of a bit of a reversal.
Yep.
And we saw hard power, or hard dollars kind of creeping back in as, you know, a very definite focus for why incentive travel experiences are happening. We wondered about that. But then when we look at other aspects of the study, we can see that in the future, most respondents are expecting that it's going to actually go back the other way and be more about some combination of the two or a greater focus on the soft power elements.
Do you think part of that could be because of the staffing shortages we're seeing in the industry and just how hard it's been to keep and maintain talent right now?
Oh, undoubtedly. I mean, like the industry has to be kind of congratulated for its incredible resilience and its courage, because about 50% of our intellectual property and our, you know, interpersonal resources actually disappeared out of the injury, out of the industry as a result of the pandemic. And then as the pandemic kind of receded, you had this kind of tsunami of new focus on kind of making up for lost time and reintroducing programs that had been postponed or suspended or whatever. So now you're trying to kind of deliver twice, three times, maybe four times the workload with half the resources. How can you do it? It's impossible. So I think that's what we're still at the end of that cycle, and that's why we're seeing things like you know, people naming the kind of the whole sort of relationship thing very complex at the moment, and maybe being a bit negative in relation to it, because, you know, it's the reality. But I think a lot of the certainly on the supplier side and on the buyer side as well, I think a lot of the incentive travel professionals are reporting either that they're hiring up or staffing up, and, you know, therefore kind of getting back to the levels that they had, and that as well that a lot of the a lot of the kind of the resources that they had are actually coming back. They're getting fed up with IT, or they're getting fed up with this work-life balance. They want to be just worked hard again.
That's what it is, right? Yeah,
exactly.
So you mentioned too that it's so complex right now trying to figure out everything in our industry, from staffing shortages and then budgets, of course, right? Everyone wants to get back out there, and we're seeing more qualifiers, but budgets aren't necessarily keeping up with the amount of people that we can bring on these trips again. So can you kind of talk about, as we look toward the future of incentive travel spend, what can we expect to see in the coming years?
I think it's going to be tricky because, you know, I think we could see it in the figures for kind of 2024. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't the same sort of unbridled optimism.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly Ashley on the panel, who's with ITA, so she's very much at the coalface of what's happening. She was reporting it being a tight year, whereas 2025 was back to the sort of levels that we would have had in 2019 or mm-hmm. before that. That is a big danger. The danger is that we unleash the power of incentives by extending the number of qualifiers.
Mm-hmm.
We don't actually unleash the power of the purse strings and actually, you know, invest in them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do that, well, then ultimately we're not going to be able to deliver very good incentive travel programs.
Mm-hmm. We're not going to get out of it what we're hoping to,
exactly.
Because we can't give them what we're promising.
It can't
right?
be an extraordinary experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's the whole purpose of incentives.
Exactly.
So this also kind of goes into the relationship between buyers and suppliers right now. We're all struggling to kind of figure out the balance. And I thought it was so interesting that you offered 9 words to describe those relationships, and only 3% of respondents were unsure of how to describe it. Everyone had something to say, an input about it. And complex was the number one word up there. And you mentioned it's like looking at Facebook profiles, right? Everything. No one knows what's going on. It's complicated right now. So what does this tell us about the state of planning and building these relationships, and how can we look toward the future? You said, like, is this as good as it gets? What can we do?
I think, again, I suppose I would reflect kind of some of the comments that came out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very interesting. We referred to the Young Leaders Conference that many of us had attended the previous day.
Mm-hmm. A wonderful conference, by the
which
way.
Was a really good kind of, I think, induction, I think, into the world of incentive travel for younger kind of professionals. Mm-hmm. And certainly one of the comments that came out of the room was that a younger professional felt a little bit kind of limited in the organization that he was working in, because he was kind of expected to work with partners that particular organization had worked with 20 or 30 years,
mm-hmm.
and he felt those partners weren't going to be able to deliver the kind of vision that he had
mm-hmm.
as a younger person
mm-hmm.
for the type of programs that they would like to do. And I thought that was a very, very telling comment, because in a way, as an industry, we are a loyal industry.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to actually continue to work with people that we have learned to trust over a period of time.
All about relationships.
Yeah. And that's hugely important. But, you know, even when you say that, Taylor, all about relationships, what Sergio was saying in the room today was, it's not my relationship, it's the relationship that my boss has had with that person.
Yes.
And that doesn't extend to me. I want to make my own relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make my 20-year kind of relationships starting now.
Mm-hmm. We could still keep the other ones.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I thought that was really interesting, that we need as well to be open to doing things in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But we also need to kind of be cognizant of the other realities of any kind of scenario where people are working with each other. We need to understand each other. We need to be empathetic with each other. We need to cut each other a little bit of slack from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our industry, again, at its worst, can be pretty kind of harsh and callous,
mm-hmm.
and pretty demanding. And I worked on the DMC side for many years, and was often the recipient of an RFP late on a Thursday afternoon, expecting a full-blown proposal by the weekend, you know, which is not really, it's not reasonable. You can't actually do good work in that amount of time. And, you know, when you would protest, you'd be told, well, look, you know, there's 10 people behind you. That'll do it if you're not willing to do it. So I think there's lots of ways in which things need to improve. And there's lots of ways that we need to be. And sometimes I think it's the corporation that also is ultimately kind of, you know, it's controlling the budget. Because you control the budget, you sometimes, you know, adopt that arrogant stance that, you know, money can buy everything. So therefore, I want it and I want it now. And I think, you know, incentive houses need to educate their corporate clients that that's not going to produce the best result. And, you know, DMCs need to educate the incentive houses around the amount of time it takes to get 10 different suppliers in your destination to come back to you, you know, with different elements of a program. Because otherwise, you know, programs are kind of thrown together rather than kind of properly curated, and that doesn't really help anybody.
Agreed. So the final topic that we discussed this afternoon during the panel, and my personal favorite, if I do say so, is the destination selection area, because I am so excited to see that these never been used and once in a lifetime kind of opportunities for travel are really rising to the top. And I will say that in doing research for my generation, for my own column, I've noticed that that's what they want too. So seeing that trend is exciting, because we're already kind of looking toward the future and preparing for the next and coming generation. But we're also seeing things like cruises coming back, and that's super exciting. And we are reminded about our partners in urban destinations that still need our support and are still kind of recovering from the pandemic. So can you break down kind of the trends we're seeing there in destination selection and the places that we may look forward to traveling to in the years to come?
I think the most interesting thing from that part of the whole kind of research for me was the fact of, you know, destinations that you haven't used before coming out as the top in terms of the type of destination that you go to, because I think it opens the door for all of those kind of second, third, fourth, even fifth tier destinations that all have something kind of very special, but wouldn't in the past have been identified necessarily as being incentive quality or whatever.
Paris and London.
Exactly. And it's wonderful to see that we're now looking beyond that. Not that Paris and London will ever go out of fashion. You know, they're perennial, you know. They will always be required because people have such a kind of a massive understanding of those destinations. It's the ultimate motivational place to go. But SITE this year made, I think, a very courageous decision. Like we've selected a destination that would be definitely regarded as, you know, a destination that people haven't been to before, as the destination where we will run Incentive Summit America. And that's an event that's been developed by SITE over the last number of years and has tended, again, quite, I think it was an innovative approach. But what we were doing was we were identifying a need to look at maybe winter incentives as something to develop.
I went to Quebec City in February, and it was unbelievable. And I think about, I've seen pictures of it in the summer. It looks just as magical, but it doesn't have that special touch that the snow adds. And people don't think about that, right?
Exactly, exactly. But and that's exactly the point, that, you know, there's novelty is important, I think, in life, but it's important in particular in incentive travel, because we have to be surprising and delighting all the time. And we have done those tried and tested destinations so often that it's great that the Quebec cities are being chosen. But SITE selected St. John's, which is in Newfoundland, as the destination. And we've also changed the time of the year that we're actually running this particular program. It used to run in March or April. usually in a mountain destination. So we've been many times to Colorado. We've been into the Canada resorts as well, Whistler and Banff and so on. Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing experience.
Yes, love those places as well.
But I think it was a courageous decision for us to actually select, you know, a destination that some people don't even know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they saw the movie. And if you saw the movie, you know exactly where it is.
Yeah, I have not. I'm like, everything's new for me. And it's so exciting.
Yeah, but St. John's is I think it's what it's opening up to us is it's opening up access to a wonderful cultural experience
mm-hmm.
that most of us wouldn't necessarily have.
Mm-hmm. And like when we do have them, we're like mind blown, right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. And the best thing about St. John's is that people in St. John's talk like me. They all have Irish accents.
<Yes. laughs>
It was one of the first points of arrival in North America for Irish immigrants after the famine. So
that's awesome.
There's still lots of Irish people mm-hmm. there. Or
I
people
didn't know
of
that.
Irish descent. Yeah, no, but you can actually, and they have a very, very strong folk tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Gaelic is even spoken.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So that gives you the opportunity to bring those cultural things that people, like those indigenous experiences and those diving into the history of the land. They're doing land recognitions now. And just there's so much more to add to these trips that, from the cultural aspect that I think is it makes it so much more meaningful,
exactly.
so much more memorable. And it's giving back, right?
Yeah.
We're practicing sustainability of cultures and just acknowledging that. It wasn't always like this, and we need to look at how we got to where we are now.
Exactly.
That's been my favorite part of it too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, those were all my questions for you this afternoon, but did you have anything else that you wanted to add or discuss about the Incentive Travel Index before we wrap it up today?
Well, just to tell everybody that it's available to download on incentiveindex.com,
mm-hmm.
or you can get it through the website as well, siteglobal.com. And, we love hearing from people who kind of access it and maybe find something in it that we haven't found ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rich in terms of the its data points, and we present it with a Tableau kind of presentation, which allows you then to actually kind of filter for, you know, different regions of the world, different mm-hmm. sectors, or different segments. So it's that's where it is.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll be sure to link to it in our podcast as well.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Patrick Gilligan, Chief Marketing Officer for Society of Incentive Travel Excellence. My name is Taylor Smith, Content Developer, Destination and Features for Meetings Today. And I thank you all for listening to today's podcast discussion. If you're interested in listening to more Meetings Today podcasts discussing the latest meetings and events industry trends, visit meetingstoday.com. And thanks again for tuning in.